So under Section 24 of the Act, it says that after holding the hearing under Section 22.3, so after having a tribunal hearing, the panel must determine whether the decision being appealed is reasonably supported by the evidence or a reasonable application of the applicable enactment in the circumstances of the person appealing the decision. So this is just a bit of my pet peeve here. I wasn't even planning to talk about this, but this act is really poorly drafted. Oh my goodness. I don't know how many times I have to read section after section and go to the regs and try to understand. They use words differently and they mean different in one section, they mean something else. It's unfortunately, I think, drafted really quickly, and it's really confusing at times. I wish they could have written, I think you could have written B much easier. Anyway, okay, back to the business at hand. So what this is actually, is it's a restriction placed on the tribunal, restricting when they can overturn the reconsideration decision. Okay? Section 24 is really, it's almost like a test that the panel's required to use when they're making a decision. So just to digress for a second, in min law there are three standards of review. One is correctness, one is reasonableness, and one is patently unreasonable. Generally, correctness is applied if you have a mistake in the lower decision. If you can identify that there's been a mistake, an error made in the lower decision, the tribunal has the authority to overturn it. The tribunal has a lot of authority when you have a correctness test to interfere with the lower decision. With a reasonable standard, it gets a little bit less easy to interfere with the lower decision. Reasonableness is, generally, if there are reasons to support the decision that was made, the tribunal does not have the authority to overturn it. So, you know, when I start talking about correctness and reasonableness, it sometimes gets all foggy to me. So if you're feeling a bit foggy, like, yeah, what does that mean? There's so much case law out there discussing what reasonableness, what correctness is, and there's all, it can get a bit maddening at times. Finally, patently unreasonable is when it's so overwhelmingly clear that there was a decision was wrong made, that was made by the lower decision makers, the tribunal can overturn it. The patently unreasonable test, which we don't really have to worry about here, but it provides the least authority, the minimal authority to a tribunal to actually interfere and overturn. So our standard, which we're now stuck with, is reasonableness. Under the BC Benefits, we had a correctness test. Under the Employment Assistance Act, we have a reasonableness test. So, unreasonableness. How do we define unreasonableness? Well, we could probably spend all day just thinking about our the new act if we want to think about unreasonableness. What we need to do from now on, when we're going into tribunal, is focus on the recon decision and why it was unreasonable. That's what this is all about now. Why was that decision made by the Employment and Assistance Coordinator, or HARU, the Health Assistance Reconsideration Unit, why was that unreasonable? So, what makes a recon decision unreasonable?
Oh, sorry.
You do have this in your documents because it's all part of the act. But would you like to still write? Okay. So, how will reasonableness be defined in our tribunals now? As I just alluded to earlier, it could become a very legalistic discussion. using all sorts of case law and legal principles about standard of review, what's reasonable, and I pray it's not going to turn into that. Or I'd like to argue, and this is what I'm going to be arguing until I'm red in the face at tribunals, is that the reasonableness should be defined as a common sense approach, and we shouldn't be getting all caught up in all these legal principles. And I think we've got a strong argument if we focus on that. The intent of the Act has been the ministry will say that the intent of the Act is for it to be accessible, that for people who are on welfare can access the ministry through its Act and regs. So first key thing, accessibility. Second thing is that there is an expectation that many people will show up to tribunals unrepresented by advocates. And third thing is their fancy-dancy administrative justice review. Their administrative justice project, sorry. And this was part of the core review that's been going on for the last 18 months. Well, it's over now, I think. And those principles very clearly state that accessibility is one of the critical things that any kind of administrative justice process must include. So I would argue that we've got a strong argument that reasonableness shouldn't have to go down this path of legal wranglings over what reasonableness is. We should be able to stand firmly and say it's a plain language interpretation on what is reasonable. What is reasonable? Did I provide this? Let me see. Is this what you?
Yeah.
No. Sorry. Oh, this is the little piece that I passed out. No. Okay. So, in this, I think that. Oh, yeah.
Tara,
I'm almost done, folks.
Mm-hmm. What would be section B be in plain language?
Right. Okay. How dare you put me on the spot like that? Okay, so A means, let me start with A and I can warm up. So the panel has to make a decision, A, that can be shown that it's reasonably supported by the evidence, so they can show, they can make a direct link. Their decision is based on the evidence that was provided. We provided a wheelchair because this individual met the criteria. The doctor's letter said this. B, a reasonable application of the applicable enactment in the circumstances of... Oh, right. The circumstances of the person appealing decision. Right. Did they apply the law reasonably? Yeah. Given the evidence. Did they apply the law reasonably given the evidence? Why they couldn't say that, I don't know. Okay, thanks. Thanks for bringing that up. Okay, so... what makes a recon decision unreasonable? And in brainstorming how we at PWA are going to start preparing for tribunals, this is kind of my starting point. And I suspect there's all sorts of other things that we could come up with in this group. What I propose in trying to determine whether or not you've got some strong merits to argue at the tribunal on unreasonableness. These are the two things that I would start to do. I would first look at the recon decision and I would identify anything in the decision that isn't linked to any evidence. It's just a blanket statement about something like, well, where did this come from? So I'd first identify all those pieces in the decision that aren't linked to this particular person. And you got to go through with a fine-tooth comb. No, you don't. I'm sorry. So if you'd like to write this down, I don't have this as a handout. So more specifically then, you can ask yourself, are the facts that the tribunal has accepted as truth based on the evidence provided at the recon stage? Or did they state a summary of facts that actually does not fit the reality that you could have proven, because it was there in your evidence, of your client? Okay? And then, yeah. Okay, so an example would be, if the facts. Okay, this kind of borrows on a case that we had. If the ministry found, it's an eligibility appeal, and the person is being found ineligible because they're living with somebody and the asset level's too high or the income level's too high, one of the two. And the ministry purports or argues that the people living together in a marriage-like relationship, and we have evidence on top of evidence on top of evidence that shows this man and this woman that are living together can't possibly be in a marriage-like relationship because one of them is gay. Okay? Then if the tribunal, or if the recon consideration just kind of overlooks all that evidence and says the people are in a marriage-like relationship and the ministry doesn't have any evidence to back that up, then a tribunal, you could argue, that's an unreasonable decision. Because we provided the evidence that clearly shows and leads the decision maker to accepting the facts that this individual is actually not in a marriage-like relationship. Now, I'm just doing that off the top of my head. Okay. The next way that you could find unreasonableness is, has the law been applied considering all the evidence provided? Sorry, did I miss something here? No, okay. Has the law been applied considering all the evidence provided at the recon stage? So an example again would be, is if they apply the law in this, well, they apply that people who are in marriage-like positions aren't eligible if their asset and income levels are over X, and you can show that actually the law states that if you're single, then your asset level is allowed to be Y, and therefore that's the law that should be applied in this situation. Now, it's not easy trying to argue what's unreasonable, especially when your gut's telling you that this is an unfair decision. But you've got to come up with these links of the evidence to the decision. That's where your link is. Now, I'm just going to finish off with one disturbing piece, which actually Vicky brought to our attention. It's a submission by the ministry. Yeah, you all have copies of it. It's in the back, really close to where you just got the recon decision. It looks like this. Okay? I'm not going to go through it, but I just want to alert you to this. This is a submission by a district office in the Kootenays. Is that right, Vicki? I'm sorry, I've been standing in front of you the whole time. If you'll note on page, go to page 4 of this submission. It's at the very, it'll be very close to the back. It looks like this. This is what the front page will look like. Okay. I'm being told that this was something that was an additional handout that you got earlier, and so it's wherever you put it. Sorry, folks. Okay. I didn't realize it was going to create that kind of confusion. Carol, are those? No. Is that it, Carol?
Yeah, that's it.
Okay. Okay. So it's really not that critical that you look at it right now, because we're not going to read it. But what I would like to do is draw your attention to it so you do read it before you go into tribunal, so you're familiar. So on page 4, under the heading called Standard of Review, this is what we've been talking about. We've been talking about the reasonableness standard of review. This submission by the ministry is extremely legal. They're citing Supreme Court of Canada decisions. They're quoting Supreme Court justices. They go on to cite Supreme Court of BC decisions, and with quotes, and then they provide summary, which they use as their argument why they're right. Now, if you just remember about 5-10 minutes ago, I was saying I believe that the reasonableness, how we define reasonableness in this act, should be common sense, plain language. This is not common sense, plain language. Okay? This stuff is written, there's no way I can believe that this has been written by anyone but a lawyer or a third year articling student or a third year law student or somebody.
And it's exactly what's being used in Victoria, too, this exact submission.
Yeah. Okay.
So
what I'm being told here at the front is that other people in other parts of BC have also seen this. Now, interestingly enough, I contacted the Vancouver region. I showed them this. They were appalled and told me that they would not be using this, that they believed that this was against the spirit of the act and it was against the whole philosophy of how they hope to set these tribunals up. Supposedly, that kind of approach is also supposed to be used in Region 2, which is the Lower Mainland for Vancouver. It sounds like we might have some problems in the rest of BC, and it maybe sounds like this group needs to figure out, okay, let's build some strategies around dealing with that. Unfortunately, again, it doesn't matter what I think, it doesn't even matter what you think. It matters what the panel thinks, and it's going to come down to them. And The manual that I gave you, the couple pieces of paper of the leaked manual, that goes into, I don't know if it's necessarily directions, but suggestions or recommendations for how the panel should interpret reasonableness. They also, in that manual, say that it should be done plainly. So hopefully that intent will continue in the panel. So that's it.
I have a question. Do we have the other mic, Diane? Oh, okay. All right,
this
so
one?
People will have to come up to the mic, or if you don't want to come up to the mic, maybe Terrell could repeat the question when you ask it.
It has to do with the very beginning, with that section 22 that you put in this document.
Mm-hmm.
I don't do tribunals or anything, but I maintain and I understand that the principles in law are the same. This is not the law, right? This is just a draft, which means that the one that people need to follow is that one, because if they need to challenge it, they won't go by this piece of paper, right?
Any piece of paper, any policy, any procedures is not law. This is law. The only thing that any kind of policy that you have from the ministry or other place that can help in interpreting. In this case, I would hope that the document that I passed around shows the intent of the new tribunal office and that the panel members will follow those directions. But it's not law. You're right.
I've seen this with the residential tenancy. They have policies and then there is the act. And when it comes that you need to challenge something, the policies can be challenged because they are not law. So
yeah.
I just wanted to clarify that because I got a little bit confused.
Good, very good point.
Thanks.
Terrell, I've had the benefit or misfortune, I guess, of doing 4 tribunal hearings.
Tell us more.
and they were all PWD.
Mm-hmm.
And I was quite surprised to win my first 2. And I think the secret to that was that both appellants gave excellent oral testimony.
Mm.
I was able to spell out to the tribunal in a very plain way how they met the definition, the new definition of disability. I referred them to the evidence that was before the ministry and I say, look, you can plainly see this person meets the definition of disability. So it's not reasonable for the ministry to have denied them then and now.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's what was the secret in winning the first two. The third one, I got a really bad decision, which clearly shows they didn't understand what they were there for.
Mm-hmm.
And they said basically, although this person requires assistance and support, they don't appear to have an additional financial need, therefore they're not disabled. So obviously they misunderstood what it was all about. The third one, the fourth one, I'm still waiting to hear on. So there is a little bit of hope that if they get the point,
mm-hmm.
That they will support, you know, the appeal. So keep
good,
working
thanks.
On it.
Can Terry?
I'm really concerned because I mean, we thought this would happen. The 2 days training is not enough to understand what they're supposed to do. And it was not just ignorance of the regulations, it was the whole, the whole administrative fairness, what have you, it was not there because they misunderstood the evidence. So I had a couple of people look at it, but at the very least I'm going to contact the chair of the appeal office, Brian Gifford, to say, look, this isn't good enough.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
I just want to